It is terrible. We have to come together and we have to stop inflaming this kind of rhetoric, using this kind of rhetoric. People have to not look to violence to solve their political disagreement.
I've gone through and I've been making my own calls to Secret Service agents that I know that are willing to talk to me off the record. And there's a lot of severe problems.
The acceptance of this kind of violence and dehumanizing rhetoric has morphed into a demand or an expectation that this rhetoric occur.
I, Shelby Bush, the delegation chair, and our wonderful state chairwoman, Gina Swoboda, and this entire delegation cast their 43 delegates to Donald J. Trump!
We are losing a generation of young people to this fentanyl crisis, and it's got to stop. The Grand Canyon State has become the fentanyl state, and it's not okay with this, Mom. I'm not okay with that.
It's clear that they all have a bias, and it's also clear that at least all the Republicans on the committee, which was a majority, are supporting a ballot initiative that is completely contrary to ours. And so we think it is intentional.
And with me to talk about Arizona's representation at the Republican National Convention, one Arizonan being floated as a potential replacement on the Democratic ticket, and more, are Marcus Dellertino of First Strategic. Good morning, Marcus.
Good morning.
And former state lawmaker Reginald Bolting. Reginald, good morning to you.
Good morning.
So, Marcus, do you see the president's speech last night?
Yes, I did.
What do you think?
I thought it was long.
90 minutes, right?
It was over 90 minutes, covered probably everything under the sun. I think what was most, and this is complete sort of insider stuff, but the speech that was written that's on the teleprompter I thought was a pretty good speech. But his tell is so obvious when he goes off script because you can see him clearly reading the teleprompter and then pivot right to the center of the stage and look out straight in front. And that's when he starts to go off script. And I think that that's largely what made it a hour and a half long speech rather than probably an hour.
Is the Republican Party as unified right now as it looked like it was on TV?
I would say it is definitely more unified than it was 4 years ago. There is absolutely no doubt about it. And we heard a lot about unity. I think Nikki Haley's speech went a far way in sort of establishing that unity point. So all in all, I think it was a pretty successful convention. But I do point out to people, if you need any further evidence of how different this party is from your parents, Ronald Reagan Republican Party, let's just hit a few high notes here. We had the head of the world's largest union as a speaker at a Republican National Convention. A professional retired wrestler, Hulk Hogan, and an adult film star. And so this is not your parents' Ronald Reagan Republican Party anymore.
Reginald, at the Democratic Convention, will anybody be ripping their shirts off on stage, do you think?
I don't think
like
so.
Like Hulk Hogan does.
I don't think so.
So, I mean, obviously, as Marcus said, like this party is far more unified now than it was 4 years ago. At the same time, the Democratic Party seems pretty – I don't know is it disunified, ununified, whatever the word is. The Democratic Party is not necessarily all on the same page at this moment.
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say that the Republican Party, everything is roses and flowers. I mean, if you watch the Trump speech, which I know a lot of people started it. I don't know how many people finished it because it was very long. I mean, if I'm summing it up, I would say, it was long. It was boring. I thought it was supposed to be unifying. It started to lead more into typical Trump, more the divisiveness that we have come to be used to. I think in the Democratic Party right now, I mean, I remind people, if you think about July of 2020, you had all of these individuals in the Democratic Party who were running for office, from Bloomberg to Harris to Sanders to Warren. You had all of these folks. So the Democratic Party, you never had everyone all lined up behind Biden. But I do think at the end of the day, this will get sorted out. And I think Trump actually didn't make a great case for himself. He reminded people of why they retired him in 2020.
Do you think that Carrie Lake, we heard a little clip of her at the top there. Do you think she made the case that she needed to make? She had a huge audience there.
Yeah, Carrie Lake, I really think she gained zero voters, new voters based on that speech. I mean, look. She has consistently, over and over again, been given opportunities to show that she's grown from the Carrie Lake that defined herself during the 2022 election. But time and time again, she continues to go back into this lane in which she's just, you know, divisive. And Arizona, to be a United States Senator from Arizona, you have to be able to work with everybody. And she has not shown that she has the ability to do that.
Yeah, I'm curious, Marcus, what you made of her speech. And then afterwards, she had a couple of television interviews, which I think could maybe kindly be called contentious.
Yeah, I think I would. That's a good descriptor. I don't think you gain Arizona voters by doing a speech at 4 o'clock on for the RNC convention, because really what you know, your target audience is an independent voter, right? Or maybe a moderate or a less general, a less primary voter, a general election voter. And so those people aren't going to be watching the speech. There's no doubt about it. But it does appeal to a national audience.
Which helps with fundraising, in theory, right?
Fundraising. Yeah. And so really at the end of the day, the goal wasn't necessarily to pick up voters in Arizona as much as it was to pick up the fundraising base.
Are you surprised that she stuck to a lot of the talking points that she has been using? I mean, we talked about former President Trump maybe trying to be a little more unifying. Carrie Lake talked about the media and talked about, you know, how horrible Democrats are. Like a lot of the stuff that she's been talking about.
Yeah, the red meat issues. I mean, I didn't hear anything that I haven't heard her say before, you know, especially the mama bear speech. But again, it's about the fundraising. And so that appeals to that fundraising base, not necessarily to the independent voter in Arizona.
So, Reginald, if you are Ruben Gallego and his campaign, what do you take from what you heard her say at the RNC?
You take every single clip that she every single clip throughout the speech. I mean, you know, what she's saying essentially is not what Arizonans want to hear. I mean, she's not talking about ways that she's going to improve the economy. She's not talking about ways that she's going to bring people together. When we think about the environment that we're in politically and the rhetoric that has been turned up, you know, consistently, you know, she's one of those individuals who has consistently been part of that using that language. And I think if you're Ruben Gallego, you just continue to point out the Carrie Lake that you knew in 2022 is the same Carrie Lake in 2024. She hasn't changed, and she's not going to be good for Arizona as the brand.
What do you make of the fact, Reginald, that, and, you know, we try not to get too much into, you know, individual polls, but we've seen over the course of several polls now over the last month or let's say 6 weeks, that Democratic Senate candidates, in some cases incumbents, in a number of swing states are polling pretty far ahead, at least ahead, in some cases more than a little bit ahead of President Biden, including Ruben Gallego here. We've Senator Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, Tammy Baldwin in Wisconsin, and some others. The Democratic senators and Senate candidates are doing better in the polls than the very top of the ticket.
Yeah, I mean, starting at the top of the ticket, I really think, you know, President Trump, in football terms, he was on the 10-yard line to run into a touchdown. He could have selected a VP candidate that was a moderate, and I think his chances to win the election would have greatly improved. He ultimately chose someone in J.D. Vance who may be a little bit further right than him with his stance on the national abortion ban. His speech, again, was it could have been unifying. It was divisive. I really think he fumbled, and he's now allowing for those people who are Biden underperforming folks, you know, Trump's not, you know, when you look at all of these polls, Trump's not over 51%. It's just Democrats are underperforming. So, you know, here in Arizona, you see Ruben Gallego, his numbers are greatly higher than Biden. It's because there's Democrats who aren't committing to Biden right now. I do think those Democrats will come along. But I do think that independence. I think those Democrats are going to come along definitely for Biden. I think they'll come along.
You
for
think
Biden.
Biden's going to be on the ticket?
You know,
in November.
I totally believe that at the end of the day, that the message and the policies that are coming from the Democratic platform, it fits mainline what Arizonans want, no matter who that person is.
Well, so, I mean, that is the big question, right, for Democrats. I mean, we keep hearing over the last couple of days, pressure is building. President Trump is reflective while he's at home in Delaware, you know, isolating with COVID. Do you, at the end of the day, I mean, none of us has a crystal ball, of course. Do you think at the end of the day that Joe Biden is the nominee?
Joe Biden says he says he's running. He says that he's going to be there. I mean, if we spend more time looking at the policies and things that he's done and things that he wants to do instead of trying to figure out whether or not he's going to run, I think the Democratic Party would be in a better position right now. You know, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. You know, there's literally, 250 some odd Democrats in Congress. You have 15 or 16 calling for them to drop out. Just today, you have the Speaker, you have the Senate, the House Minority Leader and Hakeem Jeffries saying, hey, I'm a Biden Harris ticket. So I think that until he says he's not doing it, we should assume that he's doing it.
Do you assume he's doing it?
Oh, he's dropping out Sunday.
That's very, very specific, Marcus.
Listen, Chuck Schumer's talked to him. Nancy Pelosi's talked to him. Barack Obama finally broke. I mean, I predicted this all a year ago, so it's just happening. You know, these couple days are happening fast, but this has been going on for a solid year in D.C., talking about who's going to be the replacement. There's an all-hands meeting with his campaign staff today. I assume that conversation's going to be something like, hey, you get another 30 days of pay, and then we're folding up shop. But I expect a massive announcement coming out of Joe Biden that the Democratic National Convention is going to be an open floor fight. And, man, that's going to be fun to watch.
Fun to watch, like, as a country or as a Republican?
As a Republican.
You know, just want to clear that
up. It'll be historic, though. So from a country standpoint, I mean, it will be a history-making episode. And, you know, to the Lake point, what I would caution my Democrat friends about is that, you know, Trump enthusiasm, there is an enthusiasm gap with Biden versus Trump. There's no doubt about it. It's undeniable. Trump's up in every swing state. And what for Republicans, he's carrying that energy, that turnout model into these states, which will propel Republicans into office. So for those who are quick to say, you know, Ruben Gallego's got this locked up, I think this race is going to be a whole heck of a lot closer than people think it is.
Is there a candidate out there, before we even get into that, let's say President Biden is not the Democratic nominee, without knowing who might the nominee be, does that change any of the polling? Does that change potentially the result in Arizona?
Yeah, I think it does. It changes a whole lot of things. To Reggie's point about J.D. Vance, I mean, the genius about a J.D. Vance is he comes out of Ohio and you're watching this meltdown in these Midwestern states where Democrats – traditionally a Democrat-leaning state is going with Trump. And so, you know, Democrats have to figure out how to stop that bleed in these northeastern states. As far as Arizona goes, I mean, what happens if – let's just do an if – you know, the ticket is Gretchen Whitmer and oh my God,
Mark Kelly.
Sorry. Wow.
It sounds like
didn't have enough coffee this morning. But Mark Kelly from Arizona. Would that turnout change for Democrats in Arizona? And I would have to guess that it would.
I mean, look, there's if in the event that Biden does not remain in the presidential race. Absolutely, the Vice President Harris would be the person who Democrats are going to line up behind for the presidential candidate. You know, as much talk as people like to say that, you know, open it up, the movement behind a Kamala Harris presidency in the event that Biden does not, run, it's strong there. I mean, you have almost $100 million inside of a campaign coffer that, you know, that the Biden campaign and or any Democratic presidential campaign would want access to. Harris is the only person that has access to that money. Do I think if you have a Harris-Mark Kelly ticket, does that change the calculus of Arizona? I think absolutely it does. He's someone who's consistently been on the ballot. I think he can deliver for Arizona. But I think that there's an opportunity.
So, Marcus, you're shaking your head when Reginald was saying that if President Biden drops out, Kamala Harris will be the nominee. You think not?
There's absolutely no way Gavin Newsom will not throw a fit about her being
California just, governor.
Right. Appointed, if you will, anointed would be a better word, to be the candidate. As far as the money goes, I mean, look, there's 100 different ways you can do this. Some of them end in a lawsuit that the RNC would probably put up to try and block the transfer of money. But the easiest road to go is just transfer that money over to the DNC. And then it's open for any candidate. But, you know, Gavin Newsom's clearly been working at this for a year and, you know, publicly running around telling everybody Joe Biden's my guy and I'll do anything humanly possible for him. But behind the scenes, we all know he's been running for president. And so I think he goes into conventions like, look, I got the California delegates locked down. I'll get a little help from my friends with the superdelegates, and we're going to have a good old-fashioned floor fight. And so far this morning, the public reports are that Biden will not make an endorsement of any Democratic candidate. Mm. He will stay out of the fight.
So, Reginald, both of you mentioned Senator Mark Kelly's name. His name has been floated both for the top of the ticket, also potential VP pick. What do you think the odds are that he is at least asked, let's say, if he would like one of those slots?
Yeah, I mean, I think his odds have greatly increased over the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's very popular. I mean,
he's an astronaut, right?
he's very popular. He has a lot of strong relationships back in D.C. Obviously, we know he could fundraise like out of the world. I really think that he would be someone that could bring I think he'd sweep the floor with J.D. Vance in a vice presidential, you know, debate. I think he's someone who has strong relationships, and I think he'd be strong. He's also would be, you know, playing with free money. You know, with that being said, is that, you know, his race for U.S. Senate, you know, is not till 2028. So no matter what happens, he still would have a strong position in the Senate.
Do you think there's a chance that he is elevated somewhere?
I mean, let's see what the pollsters say. here's what every pollster in the country is in the field right now trying to find out who the strongest candidate to run against Trump is.
Well, there have been some that have shown Mark Kelly doing pretty
absolutely.
Well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Among others.
There is no testing that like a presidential campaign. I mean, you talk about under a microscope. So, you know, we'll have to see. Clearly, America has shown an affinity for astronauts. So, that will be a little bit to play at it. But it also matters of who he's matched up with.
Right.
And with that, you know, when you talk about, you know, obviously what happened to, you know, former President Trump and the assassination attempt, I think, you know, if you talk about Mark Kelly, I mean, this is something that him and his family have lived through. I mean, you know, to be able to tell a story of the rhetoric in this country has gotten so high that you have people who are taking, you know, literal shots at elected officials. I mean, he understands that. He speaks to that. I think it provides an opportunity for him to talk to the country in a normal, sane way. And I think he's someone who could get something done as a VP candidate.
So let me ask you both very briefly about that assassination attempt on Saturday in Pennsylvania. In the wake of that, Marcus, and we saw this also in 2011 after the shooting of Gabby Giffords, a lot of talk about toning down the rhetoric about civility in politics. Do you think there's any chance that that lasts or it even happens in the first place?
I don't. I had great hopes immediately afterwards. I just don't think it's panning out very well. And it's going to take a lot more than one action. It's going to take a lot more than one president. You know, I don't know how that comes to fruition, but at some point, you know, the conversation needs to be had with all of America to tone it down a little bit.
What do you think, Reginald? Is it possible to tone down the rhetoric in this country at this point?
I think it's possible in the event that you have at the top of the ticket, the top of the parties, they actually they show leadership. And unfortunately, I don't think that leadership was shown during the RNC convention. I think that the first few days of the convention was, you know, I thought it was ran very well. I thought, you know, the tone was, you know, we're going to be here for everyone. We wanted unity in this country. And then the further you watch the convention, you started to see it creep back up.
All right. So let's move on to some statewide politics here. Marcus, I want to ask you about the ruling late last week that a state judge made to keep the legislative Republicans' border security measure on the ballot. The state Supreme Court is going to take it up. Were you surprised that the judge ruled that it did not violate the single subject rule?
Honestly, I was. I was really caught off guard by that, and largely because at least on its face to me, it looked like it was a violation of the single subject. You're talking about fentanyl and how you're charged when you're trafficking in fentanyl, and at the same time talking about an immigration enforcement mechanism at the border, which on its face to me seemed like two separate subjects. But the judge obviously disagrees, and he's more qualified than I am. He's
wearing the black
robe.
Right?
But I would think I'm just 10 times more interested in what the state Supreme Court, what their decision is on this measure.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big question now, right? Like, does the state Supreme Court keep this on the ballot or not? And it seems as though, like, this might be the kind of case that has ramifications beyond just this case, because we're dealing with, you know, with something that a lot of measures, a lot of laws run into in terms of the single subject rule.
I mean, if you look at the single subject rule and you look at this, you know, this measure, it's clear. I mean, for most folks who are reading it, it seems pretty clear. You know, will it still remain on a ballot? I'm going to say, you know, I think it will. I mean, when you look at the courts here, you know, there's a history of, things that look plain as day, that you think, you know, the court would go one way and they decide to go a complete opposite way. And I think that's where people really start to believe that there's a lot of, politics happening in the judiciary.
So assuming that you're right, Reginald, and it does stay on the ballot, what does that do for turnout and potential results come November?
Yeah, I don't know who's going to be spending a ton of money on this ballot measure itself. I think the top of the ticket candidates, they're going to be talking about immigration. Mm-hmm. Immigration is going to be a topic. So I don't know if there's going to be a concerted effort to put a ton of money behind this issue alone. But, you know, it's going to be a long ballot. We're talking, you know, 3-4 pages. So if folks make its way down there and they decide, I think it could pass. I think there'll be folks fighting against it, but it's going to be a major issue.
Marcus, who do you think has the bigger campaign between now and November, the pro side or the anti side?
Oh, the anti side will probably have the more money, but it'll be irrelevant. I mean, this thing's going to pass. And I think we've undervalued how frustrated Arizonans are with illegal immigration. The irony, of course, here is, you know, this measure was intended to be a turnout motivator for Republicans, right? And that was on the heels of the abortion decision. And now the ballot proposition having to do with abortion was, of course, a motivator for Democrats to turn out to the ballot. And so the Republicans countered with, OK, let's go with illegal immigration and that'll help move Republicans to the ballot. And I would argue that although that was all totally true at the time, the world has changed so significantly in such a short amount of time that actually neither of the measures will probably be the motivating factor to get to the ballot anymore, especially if Biden decides he's not running and they have a new candidate, that's going to be new energy involved around that candidate and that campaign that'll be a motivator in itself.
I'm curious about the idea to sort of bring it back nationally as we're starting to wrap up. Reginald, do you think that is there something to be said? You know, Marcus mentions an enthusiasm gap between Trump supporters and Biden supporters. If there is a new candidate, maybe an open convention, does that do something for energy on the Democratic side?
I think you're going to see a lot of energy, particularly around abortion. I mean, you know, abortion is still a significant issue. With the selection of J.D. Vance and his push for a national abortion ban, I think if you're going to see any type of energy, you're going to see that abortion initiative get even more money than it already has, more folks talking about that issue and really defining the Trump-Vance ticket as one that's going to not be good for women and families here in Arizona.
All right, we'll have to leave it there. Reginald Boulding, Marcus Delortino, guys, thanks for coming in. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.